bending the cost curve in healthcare. What exactly does that mean? Is it possible? And how will that affect your healthcare? Joining us on the Bioethics Channel to talk about those questions are Marcy Nielsen, Vice Chancellor of Public Policy at the University of Kansas Medical Center, and Dr. Renee Boyer, a family practice physician from Kansas City. Marcy, let's start with you. We just finished a session that was part of a healthcare reform series with the Center for Practical Bioethics, and you talked about bending the cost curve. What exactly does that mean?
Well, I think you first have to start with understanding that if we're going to bend a curve, it's important to know that the current system is on an upward trajectory in terms of healthcare costs. Those are overall healthcare costs for our country. They are health insurance premiums for families or folks who get their health insurance in the individual marketplace. We see the skyrocketing rates of out-of-pocket care that so many of us have to pay for. So when you look at that trajectory and you think about bending the cost curve, what you're talking about is what are ways moving out into the future that we can think about increasing efficiencies and spending smarter so that it's not a matter of no longer providing benefits. It's not a matter of rationing care. It's about bending the curve so that everyone can get access to care, but we do it in a way that everyone can afford. Because if you just add a bunch of people to the system and don't do anything about the costs, that isn't a system we can afford in this country.
One thing you said that caught my interest that I really hadn't heard anyone else say was the idea that spending more might be okay if we really see the value in what we're spending the money on.
And we clearly are a country who values medical care. We value our health care providers. We value having quick access to our primary care providers, our specialty care. So we absolutely value medical services, and we have the world's best medical care. What we don't have is a smart system that ensures everyone's getting access to the care that they need, but that we're incentivizing smart health behaviors, that we're incentivizing well-coordinated care by providers. And so really we've got to turn the system on its head a bit, but because we like our medical care just as it is, it makes significant health reform a very large challenge for policymakers.
So calling it a system probably gives it too much credit.
I would say that's correct. Now, we talked tonight about the fact that there's sort of a cobbled together system, and certainly there's a safety net system. But the thing is, if we're paying double all the other industrialized countries who insure all their citizens, and our health care outcomes are worse, we're not getting the value for the dollar that we Americans expect. And it's really about value. It's not overall costs. It's value for what we spend.
Now, Dr. Renee Boyer, you're a family practice doctor here in Kansas City. When you hear things like bending the cost curve and what Marcy just said, how do you react to that?
I think we all know that we have an expensive system that doesn't always serve the patient in the best way. And that is probably a little bit an unpopular characterization of it, because I think a lot of doctors feel like we do have a good system that is giving the best care. We have the best doctors and provide those services. But I see it as a primary care doctor, seeing that fewer and fewer graduates are entering residency in family practice and in general internal medicine and pediatrics also, but especially in family practice. Yet that is the primary care specialty that is really going to be crucial as we move in developing a more organized healthcare delivery system, because it is chaotic right now. And it's especially chaotic if you don't have somebody to guide you through the system.
Having that advocate.
We have a fragmented system, and patients who are savvy oftentimes end up getting access to a lot of doctors, but they don't always get the best care because it's not coordinated well.
Still, though, and you remember that I used to work with the Metropolitan Medical Society here in Kansas City in the 90s, and I heard a lot of doctors say a lot of different things, but, and whenever you would have someone like Marcy say, let's spend smarter, alarm bells would go off. Wouldn't you say that's true?
Well, I think so, because people equate it with, we've all watched with less revenue, and we've all seen what Medicare and what the insurance companies have done to us over the past 10 years. We make up for the decreased reimbursement we get by working harder, doing whatever we do, more of it for longer hours, but we eventually reach a point where you cannot continue to do that. And so I think when people hear about cutting costs, doctors look at it and say, okay, my reimbursement is in some way going to be negatively impacted by this.
Hmm. Now, Marcy, one thing that you said in your presentation was, and I think I have this right, some 50% of the expenditures on healthcare are misused, overused, or underused. Could you explain that a little bit?
Sure. There was a study in the Journal of the American Medical Association that took a look at the overall way in which we utilize the healthcare system and whether or not that comports with evidence-based care on a whole host of different factors. And what they found was, as you mentioned, about half the time we are overusing the system. We are underutilizing the system, or we're misusing the system. And so when you're overusing it, you are probably going straight to your specialist, having multiple tests done, maybe having the same test done with your primary care doc. Could be a mistake on the part of your hospital or your provider that they lost your records, etc. We don't have a well-coordinated health information technology system that allows us to quickly pull up patients' records. So that's the overuse of the system. Then you have the underuse of the system. We have people who are uninsured. They don't go in for preventive health services. They don't go in when they're sick. And we find that when they do finally go in, they have twice the rate of cancer diagnosis, for example, in late stages. So that's an underuse of the system. The misuse of the system is, frankly, things like consumers walking in the door demanding that their doctor prescribe some new drug that they saw advertised on television last night. We have so much information thrown at consumers. They have a very difficult time figuring out fact from fiction, if they really need some procedure or some pharmaceutical. And so we have folks in our system who misuse it. And so those are all of the various ways in our very fragmented system that we aren't being smart. And the number one reason is because our care is not coordinated.
Dr. Boyer, from your perspective and perhaps from your patient's perspective, identifying what actually is misuse or overuse or underuse, I guess sometimes wouldn't that depend on the eye of the beholder a little bit?
Perhaps. Yeah, I think sometimes the patient feels more empowered and feels as though they know more than they really do. And, you know, we all do that. Doctors are notorious for going and investing in stocks on their own and managing their own funds and screwing it up on their own. And so you have, I think it's human nature that when you give people that opportunity to do it, they will try to do things on their own. But it's exactly right. We have to take advantage of the expertise of the medical professionals and work through the system.
Now, Marcy, you brought up some potential policies. And one, we've mentioned chaotic, fragmented system. And one of this was electronic medical records and other things. Could you talk about some of the policy approaches that, in your opinion, and perhaps in some legislators' opinion, would bend that cost curve?
Sure. I think what we know about information technology in general is that it makes our lives far more efficient and effective. In 1988, when I was a Peace Corps volunteer on the other side of the world, I could, if I had any money in my bank account, I could use an ATM card in Bangkok, Thailand to pull that money out. was in 1988. So we've had the technology that allows banks to speak to one another, that allows multiple different industries to have a far more efficient system. And yet, we don't really have that system in healthcare. And I think most consumers don't recognize that. What we have are electronic health records that are kept differently with each provider. And unfortunately, they don't speak to anybody, any other system, unless those systems are specifically designed to talk to one another. And so we are moving toward what's called interoperability in the world of health information technology. It is incredibly expensive, but through the federal stimulus package that was passed as far back as February, I believe, there was a huge investment by the federal government in interoperable health information technology. Now, it can't just be HIT thrown at providers and we keep our fingers crossed and hope that it works. It is merely a tool. And if we don't use that tool to help providers, all too often, frankly, we give health information technology to providers and it adds work. It doesn't subtract work. So you've got to change their practice in a way that makes sense for them so that they actually find it useful. Those electronic health records can then be shared with patients. So they've got more access. We talk about consumer empowerment. How fabulous would it be to know the last time you went to the doctor, to be able to check your own labs? But right now, today, our doctors don't get paid when we send them an email. Our doctors don't get paid for multiple different things that, frankly, lawyers get paid for. They get a bill for all kinds of things that our providers...
Well, we should have a lawyer in here to be able to talk about how that is valuable to them, and they should be paid. But
that's exactly right.
Well, Dr. Boyer, whenever you hear something like that, you mentioned somewhat the administrative burden that is part of a medical practice today that keeps you from being directly having that time face-to-face with patients. And an electronic medical record, while it sounds in concept great, I think Marcy related to that right now, would add an administrative burden. Where do you draw a balance there?
We have an electronic medical record in our office, and the startup is difficult, but it is tremendously valuable to us in terms of enhancing the care that we provide to our patients. I can, if I'm on call on the weekend, I can access the patient's information at 11:30 at night when I get woken up to answer a phone call. So I can talk to the emergency room and tell them what happened with the patient the day before when they saw my partner in the office. So it is very beneficial. We didn't have, when we got our system started, there was no funding available to us. The insurance companies didn't provide that. So we are providing better care to our patients in our practice, yet we get no reimbursement for that. And so any communication I have that's aided by our electronic medical record, there's no benefit to me, but we know it's the right thing to do. And we're ready to link up. It can be done. It's the one thing I've learned from having a record like this is the computers can do anything. I mean, we can make them do anything. It's just that it is tremendously expensive.
Now, a crystal ball question that I've asked all the participants in this healthcare reform series sponsored by the Center for Practical Bioethics. If you could look ahead a year from today, and in this case, October 20th, 2010, where do you think we'll be, and we'll be at that place where we're bending the cost curve for the benefit of physicians and patients? Marcy, we'll start with you. A year from now.
A year from now, I think we will have some kind of health reform. It won't be what we started talking about a year ago. It will be more incremental than that. I don't think a year from now we will have significantly bent any cost curves, but we will be putting all of the structures in place to do just that. I think there are enough folks who understand the current system is not sustainable, and change is very, very difficult, and the infighting in Washington doesn't make it any more palatable to folks here in the Midwest. But we've got to be doing something better and smarter.
Dr. Boyer, a year from now.
Well, I'm the eternal optimist. So I that being said, I don't see how we can be saving any money by then. And I guess I, in my mind, am building into this that this is going to cost in the short term. The cost is going to be significant. It's down the road when we would hope to see the benefit from it. I think a year from now, some of the anger that is taking over some of the people in our country, both within the healthcare system and among the consumers, I would hope will be settling down and people looking at this as our problem that we all have to work together to fix, and that we have to become a healthier society and we have to become smarter in the way we take care of ourselves and address our healthcare issues.
Rene Boyer is a family practice physician in Kansas City, Missouri. Marcy Nielsen is Vice Chancellor of Public Policy at the University of Kansas Medical Center. You've been listening to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information on the final forum on healthcare reform sponsored by the Center for Practical Bioethics, it's next Tuesday, October the 27th. Visit practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. I'm your host, Lorel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.